this tweet from Skip Bayless from about a year ago. Pat Riley should have done whatever it took to get Russell Westbrook, giving up Bam and or Winslow and or Hero. Russ would have made Miami relevant again and at least given them a chance in the least. And, you know, in the East, he calls it the least.
We get it. Yeah, we get it.
Oh, that's witty. That's witty. Skip Bayless just
acting. The West is better.
Yeah. Skip Bayless is just best. Acting like it never happened, huh? If you see on his tweet, it's like whenever you have a questionable tweet and you try to bury it with like a bunch of other tweets, that's sort of what he's doing. Like, okay, Skip, I guess we were the problem and we're off to the next thing. Heady play by him to do that before football season started, because now it's just gone.
Russell Westbrook, I love that his season ended with him getting Rajon Rondo's brother ejected from the bubble because Rajon Rondo's brother was calling him trash. And I loved Rajon Rondo's quote after the game. Hey, my brother was saying a lot of things, but none of it was disrespectful. Again, he called Russell Westbrook trash.
Right.
None of it is. That's not disrespectful. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Is someone calling you trash disrespectful?
It is, but it's the NBA, the NBA playoffs. Should he be ejected from the bubble for the remainder of time? He wants to watch his brother in the Western Conference Finals. I feel like it's a bit too far. I mean,
he's also the barber in the bubble, too. So at that point, the NBA needs to look at him and be like, well, Russ, you're out.
Stugatz always advocates for you can say whatever you like to the players. Stugatz always advocates. You are like, I'm a player apologist. You're a heckler apologist.
All's fair in love and war, Dan.
Yeah, they're just games, though. They're not. It's neither love nor war.
No, but within reason, Dan, I think it's Rondo's brother. It's not a random fan. It's someone who's related to Rajon Rondo. What do you expect coming from someone related to Rajon Rondo? I expected that response from Russell Westbrook, the exact one that we got. In the grand scheme of things, it's not the worst thing in the world.
It's not correct, Stugatz. It is not the worst thing in the world.
Kick him out.
Yes.
There's worse things in the world, Dan.
Yes, you're totally right. I was reading a story in the Miami Herald this weekend about the fires in California, and a guy came upon a charred body that was speaking to him, didn't recognize the charred body, and the charred body said, I'm your wife. Yeah, there are worse things in the world than calling Russell Westbrook trash. Thank you for nothing, Stugatz.
I'm glad you found some perspective over the weekend. Thank you.
But my point was on Russell Westbrook that game has now finally, even though the Houston Rockets did a marvelous job of trying to camouflage it by going to an innovative style of basketball, that's how it ages right there, with the Lakers not even bothering to guard him because he couldn't make any jumpers. And there were plenty of people making the argument on behalf of trade for Chris Paul, trade for Danilo Gallinari, as, by the way, we haven't talked about this yet, I don't know what this means. I don't know in the modern age as a 51-year-old journalist what I'm supposed to make of social media, but Giannis has unfollowed all of his teammates on Instagram as he is going into a meeting this weekend with ownership to discuss his future. I don't know what to do with that.
Dan, we need clarity because Worldwide Wob is on this too. Did Giannis, because Giannis had a meeting with Bucks brass. The question is, did he unfollow the teammates before the meeting or after the meeting? Because that can change everything.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it mean something that he unfollowed them, period?
I mean, means he's playing hardball.
Yeah,
then.
He's doing the superstar thing. I mean, where Bradley Beal got people excited, but it is with a suspicious social media behavior. Giannis has always said the right thing. Even after getting eliminated, he said the right thing, but he never gave you a crumb on social media. Players know the playbook. He finally gave people a crumb.
Well, what does it mean? Does he want out of Milwaukee, or does he want all new teammates in Milwaukee?
It could mean that he's applying pressure because he knows that people like us are going to read into it. But when you do a social media move like that, it's never just coincidence with these guys. That is a tactic. We'll see if it's a negotiation tactic or if it's a tactic to get himself out of there.
You said before we started talking here, I have a heat take. You said, I've got something that I want to get out there. It's important that I throw this out there so that people hear this from my megaphone. Mega mics.
Yeah, my mega microphone. Here we go. The Miami Heat should not play on Tuesday.
To make a political stand of some sort?
The Miami Heat should absolutely not play on Tuesday to make a political stand, because we've had all this talk about using the platform for good, but the goal is lofty, right? You see it in the end zone stencil, end racism. How do you go about doing that? because you're not going to do it during the playoffs. Hell, we've been trying for 400 years. How do you do it? Incremental systemic change. The Miami Heat offered up their arena and really pushed and catered, according to you, to every demand the city made. And at the end, the mayor of said city still decided to put it at the Frost Museum, which is going to get fewer people out there because people think it's going to be a headache. What's this parking situation? I'm worried about COVID.
Let me explain this to the audience, if I may, just real quick here, because the Miami Heat can't prove what it is that they think happened there. They can't prove it. And so because they can't prove it, it hasn't gotten instigated to a higher place, even as they've sent out a statement that is pretty agitated. This is the backstory on this, okay? Everyone in this city knows where the arena is. Everyone knows how to get there. It is a pretty perfect voting place if you're not worried about voter suppression of any kind. The Miami Heat believe that the Republican mayor in an area that is two-thirds Democrat and one-third Republican, that he made it at the Frost Museum, which a lot of people don't know where it is, even though it's right next to the arena. The landmark you use to get to the Frost Museum is the arena. The Miami Heat wanted to be a voting site, and they asked the people involved with this, they asked, hey, can we see this list of demands you've given us? Can we see if you've given this list of demands to every other place that wants to be a voting center? They were never given comparables. They believe that they were asked to do things that no one else was asked to do, like take down Black Lives Matter signs, take down sponsorship signs, but they did it. They acquiesced to every single demand that they believe no one else was being asked to succumb to, and they were still rejected for this, and they were angry about it, but I don't think angry enough about it to do what Mike's saying.
Yeah, I think that we should get an explanation from the mayor. And that's a pretty big game coming up Tuesday night, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And this is where you go about systemic change. Because not only is this a two-thirds Democratic place, and if you want to actually bring about change, you have to remove those in power, in theory, because this all happened on their watch. So if you want to get into, well, the mayor is incentivized by not putting it in an exciting place, because I think, oh, they're allowing votes at the Miami Heat Arena? I want to vote at the Miami Heat Arena. I think that's an exciting thing for potential voters. There hasn't been an explanation. In the Miami Heat statement, they're confused by this. It seems as though it's a political ploy.
Well, they thought it was a done deal. Spoelstra, I think, was quoted. I don't know if he was quoted, but he thought that they were all that it was done. It was already done, that the arena was going to be a voting site.
So if we're admitting that voting is a priority by the NBA, which it is, if we believe the Miami Heat statement that they're mad, which they are, and if we know that ending racism is lofty, and the only way to do that is with incremental change,
right?
Why not hold the power in this city accountable and say, we're not playing until we get an explanation? Now you've turned an entire city against a mayor because it's the mayor, conceivably, that is preventing this game from happening.
You might have a scenario where some of the city turns on the team because they want their feel good.
Yep.
This might not be important enough for them to say, hey, sit down, don't play game one. I'm not even certain if it's important enough to Pat Riley, to be quite honest with you.
I understand, and I think this is lofty, but if you go into attainable systemic change, that's one that's a lot easier than even putting officers in prison.
Are you willing to, and this is a stupid question to ask, but I think the fan base here might sort of absorb it in a way, because we can be one-issue voters on some of these things. Are you willing to forfeit a game over that? Like, you should be, in theory, in a utopian place where you believe in your principles. Are you willing to forfeit a game over that? Because the Bucks, when they led all that stuff, they were willing to forfeit the game against the Magic, but they were better than the Magic, and they were up 3-1 in the series when they were willing to do
that. What if the Celtics don't want to do that?
Look,
they want to play.
I know I gave my opinion. Easier said than done. I probably, if I had worked all season long like the Miami Heat have, I just made one of the biggest upsets in playoff history, I'm probably not going to be the first voice in the meeting saying, guys, we shouldn't play. And I probably shouldn't attach my opinion to my initial take. But it's something to consider, right? This is an interesting
thing. No, Mike, it is. But I'm wondering, because you seem pretty adamant about this, and you think that
it's easy to be adamant with someone else's principles.
No, I understand that. Are you going to be disappointed in your heat if they don't do this? Because I think you're right. I think it probably would help. It's a big platform,
man. I'm not going to be. Look at what I'm asking for. I'm not making the sacrifice. I'm not running in practice. I'm not sweating. I just want an explanation as to why it's at the Frost Museum. And I'm not satisfied with what's going on, which is just sweeping it under the rug. It's at the Frost Museum. No explanation. Give a public explanation. Hold the power accountable.
There are a number of things that are interesting about what Mike is saying there, Stu Gatz. When the NBA decided to strike, the biggest criticism, and I thought it was a fair criticism, well, what do you want? What do you want in exchange for striking? What can we give you? What do we have the power to give you that we want these games so bad that we would give you? And so they returned to work, because all they were ultimately doing is showing their displeasure and bringing a spotlight right to what it is that they were talking about. This would be a specific demand, and it's a demand ultimately that's pretty easy, Stu Gatz. Like, give us answers on this, turns the spotlight all from game one, Eastern Conference Championship, to, hey, Jimenez, answer some questions about this, because this doesn't look very good that the Miami Heat believe in statement form, not sanitized corporate statement, the Heat in statement form have angrily said, essentially, we believe that this is voter suppression. We believe that this is nefarious, what has happened here, how it is that we got rejected. It's a specific ask. I just don't know how much these players are considering the idea of a specific ask, where explain yourself. Why can't our arena be a voting site when you've got LeBron James working on all this voting stuff? Meaningful change when it comes to how it is this process works.
I was sure when Mike started there saying that he doesn't think the Heat should play Tuesday is because he doesn't want them to go up against the Canes on Thursday night.
Ooh, it's a tough conflict. This Saturday, College Game Day is coming to your city in Louisville, Kentucky. Biggest game of the week. That's right, Miami at Louisville. Miami opens a 1.5-point dog. Boys, the Canes are back.
Oh, God. What do you mean?
They are ranked.
I don't know. I don't know if you guys scope the landscape in the college football world, but a lot of good teams were losing to other good teams that aren't nationally respected, such as Arkansas State.
Right now, Mike is right. Iowa State was a team that many people thought might have a chance. Final Four. They get upset by Louisiana over the weekend at home.
Just saying,
crazy weekend.
I know what Sugats,
the Cyclones.
I know what Sugats wanted to do with the UAB game. Say, it's UAB, but I don't know if you noticed this, but that performance on Thursday night was the second greatest rushing performance of a generation for Miami Hurricanes fans. I'm just saying, we're back.
I thought that the last time you were at a microphone immediately after the game, that what you announced is, this coach has to show me something.
Oh, he did. He did. Canes are back. Canes are so back. I mean, it was a hell of a performance. And I don't know if you saw the quotes from this is something that I didn't know in reacting to that game. UAB came out with a defense they had never shown. Imagine preparing all that time.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Do you have to be quaking in your boots when UAB comes out with a defense they have never shown?
That's a very good front seven. And I know DJ Ivy had a difficult time with Austin Watkins out there on the outside. But look, Austin Watkins is going to be playing on Sunday. Now, the key to me in this game against Louisville is
playing what?
Who's going to be on Tutu Atwell?
The oboe?
Tutu Atwell could be a problem. They like to move him around over at Louisville. Is he going to be on the outside? Is he going to be inside, working the slot a little bit? That's where Miami's defense is susceptible. However, Miami's defense only gave up over 30 points once, and they scored 31 points. It was an incredible offensive output and a ho-hum performance where we're desiring more from what we see in Miami. They just put up over 30 points like nothing, and we're all just criticizing them. I think the Canes are back.
Yeah, you mentioned that a couple of different times. I've been tired of hearing that
over
the last 20
years. Well, this is a big suey. It's a national platform, and considering that they are the main national game the College Game Day is attending, I think that this is a national conversation now.
No, it's a big one. I mean, UAB, to your credit, was 9-5 last year.
Also, two huge conferences aren't playing this year, so options are limited.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a good point, Bill.
It is.
Isn't the Big Ten coming back now? Aren't they taking a vote?
It seems as though the vote didn't go the way that many people were hoping. That's early reports, though.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I wanted to ask you guys this question based on the results of the weekend here, and I don't know if Mike can do with some of the, you know, the Raging Cajuns and some of the other teams that won this weekend, what he just did with UAB. But can I ask this question, put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Does Iowa State just exist to get trampled by the rest of the conference? Because I feel like everyone in the Big 12 outside of Oklahoma and Texas, and Oklahoma, every time they end up in one of these games, they end up getting slaughtered when they're at the end of, you know, the Final Four. But I feel like that entire conference should be downgraded. It should either be a Power 6 or a Power 4. I don't think it should be a Power 5, given the way that conference with Kansas and Kansas State, the teams they specifically lost to, they lost three games in the Sun Belt? Was it three games?
I think so, yeah. I'd say it'd be a Power 3. Like, I have no desire for the Big 12 or the Pac-12. Do you, Mike? Like, I have...
I think we're a little harsh on Iowa State and probably not giving the Raging Cajuns enough credit. Matt Campbell and Iowa State have built that program up quite a bit. They've had some good results over there at Iowa State. The Cyclones have been playing pretty well over these last few years.
I'd say the Power 2 in Clemson. I mean, that's it.
I heard a little Joe Tess from Mike there. There was some Joe Tess in that breakdown of Iowa State.
See, there, I privately hold the theory that if you just say names associated with programs, you sound much more knowledgeable.
Of course.
That's what everybody does with Matt Campbell in Iowa State. He's thought of as this, like, next coaching guy. So everyone just assumes because of that Iowa State's good. I think that's what's happening there.
I'm wondering if this happened to you guys, okay? Because I also this weekend somehow out of nowhere was studying the Raging Cajun special teams unit that produced two touchdowns because I was so starved for anything that resembled football. But that first schedule was so flimsy. Game one Saturday, it was so flimsy. Now, they produced the upsets, but those games were between teams like, what was the best matchup going into the game? Was it Clemson against Wake Forest? Like, what was the best of the games?
Honestly, I thought that it was actually the Raging Cajuns at Matt Campbell. I circled that game.
I think it was Notre Dame Duke.
I circled that game.
I think it was Cuddy and Brian Kelly. I mean,
what did you circle it for? Yeah.
Oh, Upset City. I put the Cyclones on upset alert, Chris.
Wow.
You couldn't get up for South Alabama UTSA on ESPN2 at 7:30? Primetime, baby.
Well, I'm so happy that game got moved because FSU. We haven't laughed at FSU yet.
Oh, we got to laugh at FSU. How have we waited this long to laugh at FSU?
They lost again.
FSU loses to Georgia Tech, even making Roy roar with laughter. They lose to Georgia Tech. I don't know if you watched that game, but good Lord, FSU's quarterbacking issues. My God.
Man, they're trapped in some kind of hell. But this is what my whole thing was about UAB. There's some really good teams along that Fun Belt, Dan. I don't know how much Fun Belt football, and I know we've lost Maction, but we've replaced that Maction-sized hole in our hearts with Fun Belt football. Raging Cajuns are good. You don't like to give these teams credit. Well, you asked me for some live doggies on Saturday, Dan.
You did. You picked Lafayette. You picked
Arkansas State as well.
You picked
those
Arkansas
Red Wolves.
State.
Let me tell you, those Red Wolves, I mean, they are a handful, and Kansas State couldn't keep up with the Red Wolves. The Fun Belt has some really good teams in it, and I'm glad that Big Ten and Pac-12 aren't sealing their headlines because not enough credit is given to the Fun Belt.
Raging Cajuns are number 19 in the country right now.
They are.
Deservedly so.
You have a gambling problem.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Douche or no douche, calling the Sun Belt the Fun Belt.
The best part about FSU Georgia Tech is that they actually were allowing fans in there, and the internet was not too kind to FSU because it did seem like they had way too many fans. But the good part about that was we got sad people covered in garnet and gold glitter.
Yes.
Right. Just like sad Florida State fans.
Watching that game in Tallahassee, it was sort of like aggressive defiance when it came to mask protocols. It's not just, hey, this is as full as a stadium is normally for an opening conference game for FSU. We have mask protocols, and unlike Notre Dame, where the camera can actually shift away from the one kid that is talking without his mask on, nobody in Tallahassee is wearing their mask. And by the end of the game, man, did they wish they were
wearing their mask. They all wanted to go home wearing some sort of mask.
That's unfair. The guys that were like covered in like garden and gold glitter were wearing garden and gold glitter masks. So they were wearing
camouflage.
It was camouflage.
Yeah.
But they were, I mean, I mean, Tallahassee, I understand where they lean, and this has inexplicably become a political statement, but thank God they didn't, because I have all those sad pictures now on my timeline, and I get to laugh and hold people accountable because they weren't wearing masks, and they're FSU fans. Losers, all of them.
Didn't you leave Doak Campbell one time, like, dressed as an orange or something and after a loss? Didn't you? Isn't there some story?
I've only been to Doak Campbell once, and that was the great Malik Rozier game. Who can forget it? Yeah, so I left victorious. My body was shaking. It didn't actually register because we were in the midst of a long losing streak to FSU, and now we're in the midst of a long winning streak against FSU.
I can't remember a single thing about that game. Can you, Dan?
No. The great Malik Rozier game? I don't remember that at all.
There was a throw in the end. Are you kidding me? Braxton Berrios had something to say about this game. That was a Braxton Berrios like trying to leave the locker room, like, hold me back, hold me back. This is a crazy finish, one of the most memorable finishes in the series, boys.
I just saw that UCF moved up 7 spots in the rankings in the AP this week, and they're 0-0 still.
Yeah. I think Ohio State is ranked.
Wow, Tennessee are the big movers. They moved up 10 spots in the rankings, and they're also 0-0.
How many more weeks are going to feel like Saturday, though, where you get these flimsy schedules because there are so many teams not playing? Is that didn't feel like a normal week one. It did, obviously. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic, but when you said week one, college game day, Corso and Herb Street, everybody's back. I thought we'd have at least one game, one matchup between people that we cared about watching play each other.
I think you'll go back to some sort of normalcy in 2 weeks where you have Alabama playing, and that will feel normal. I don't know who they're playing.
But you just said Notre Dame Duke is what
that was the big game. And then you have Kentucky Auburn in a couple of weeks, and Kentucky's a top 25 team because they haven't played yet and haven't lost.
Because there are only 25 teams playing, so everyone's a top 25 team. I think some SEC teams start next week, and one of the things that happens when you have all these games, but then the NFL happens and it bumps everything out of the headlines, is you don't really see how many games have been further postponed due to COVID right before kickoff. Guys, I know you were disappointed to find out we weren't having a Commonwealth Cup this week. Because Virginia Tech had a bunch
Virginia
of positives.
Tech, yes.
So I think actually teams are incentivized. The earlier you start, the better, because then you have more time to make up these games, because there's a month in between the end of the regular season and the postseason, and you're going to be seeing a lot of that. SMU had it. Virginia Tech had it. You're only going to be seeing more of it.
Two good games. Like, what happened here? Army, BYU, both undefeated, both top 25 teams. Houston, Memphis, also two good teams. Those games were both postponed. They're supposed to be this weekend.
BYU had COVID fears. Oh. Yeah.
What the hell are we
doing? Yeah, it's happening a lot.
There's like shadiness, though, with the COVID stuff. You'll see like a team will announce 32 guys are not playing between injuries, suspensions, and COVID. It's like, well, how many of those guys have COVID? Who got this? Like, they're being very shady about this.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley is already out here trying to manipulate the system and trying to treat it as if it's like a regular injury and not be transparent about it, because he sees a tactical advantage in not announcing who, because of contact tracing, is out.
That's crazy that that's what they're doing.
Is it? I mean, it's totally expected.
It's crazy, Mike.
Of course. But throw your mortals away, boys, because the Raging Cajuns were a live doggy.
Guys, I've been railing about sports without fans for a while now. I have tennis, U.S. Open final yesterday, an absolute disaster. No fan reaction after big points. I know it was a great match, but an absolute disaster. The NFL, for some reason, the place where I thought I wanted fans the most, it affected me the least. And I am wondering, I was talking to Chris and Billy here before we turned the mics on, and they agree with me, it wasn't terrible. I thought the viewing product yesterday for the NFL, even without fans, was pretty good. I could hear sounds I've never heard before, play calls being discussed. So, I don't, Mike, how'd you feel about it? From a viewing experience, I thought, not having fans there, not a big deal.
I also thought that the sport of football really drew the most from its atmosphere and its fans. And then you realize when you're watching an NFL game, 98% of the camera shots don't feature any of the fans ever. So aesthetically, it looked like a normal Sunday. The pumped-in sound did make it seem like there isn't anything awkward. College football is a bit weird. College football, because they don't pump in the audio, because teams can't agree. to how much stadium noise can be pumped in. And some of these schools aren't having their bands out there, so you're missing some atmosphere. But all in all, when Phillip Rivers has the ball with a minute left and is down a score, that's the most normal I felt in 9 months.
It did. You're so right about that, Stugatz. I was wrong. I was surprised. I thought that that was going to be something that was missed, and it wasn't missed at all, like at all. I would say 0% in terms of impacting the way that you view the witching hour and all that stuff.
What's the need to put the mascots and the cheerleaders in like the second and third decks of these stadiums? Like, can't we just give them a corner on the field? Why are we putting them way up, like at the top of the stadium, as if, you know, something's going on that they can't be any closer?
I think what's happening there is that there are tiers to how it is that you're allowed in terms of importance to be close to the field, because the sideline reporters are also in the stands.
Right.
And it's been jarring. Frankly, it's been flabbergasting to see that the NFL has zero positive tests, like anywhere. You don't, that none of these guys, that the army discipline of that sport has somehow made it so that all of the testing that the NFL is doing, and nobody is testing positive. They want to keep it that way. If Fauci was saying football can't succeed without a bubble, which he was saying it had to be in a bubble through week one, no, it doesn't have to be in a bubble. And probably because the mascot's not that important, you can have the mascot close to the field without being on the field.
Right. There's plenty of people who are down on the field, so I think they're trying to keep them in the stands, Billy. But I want to see what it looks like, obviously, after a week or two, Dan, because now you're bringing travel into the equation, players actually playing other players, you're staying at hotels on the road. So I want to see, hopefully, there will be zero or very little in the way of negative or positive tests moving forward here, because the product I saw on the TV yesterday is one that I could get used to and be excited about moving forward here for the remainder of the season.
Back to the piped in crowd noise. It's not just generic. It's situational. There was a funny part late in the Saints-Bucks game where a call was made and they started booing, and Joe Buck is like, oh, the crowd's booing. That's not here. And it was funny and clunky. But
I'm waiting, because you know it's going to happen, right? Where a coach of a home team gets mad at the person who's playing the crowd noise in his own stadium because it distracted someone or something. And he does something where he tells them to turn it down, or there's a post-game press conference where he's like yelling about the sound guy, because it's going to happen, right? Because that's how football happens.
Yes.
Whenever someone makes a mistake, you always blame someone else. So it will happen at some point where a player or a coach blames the sound guy this season, right?
I love the idea of a quarterback stepping up to the line, waving to turn the sound down, and the kid having no idea how to turn the sound down. He's turning it up by mistake. Billy, I'm with you. I can't wait for this
to
happen.
You have a kid doing it? Is that
I do. I have
that?
Kids doing these jobs. They seem important. I don't know why, but I have a kid doing it, like an intern.
In watching some of this, so don't you kind of feel like some of this is kind of BS? Like, the illusion of safety and health protocols are more important than the actual safety and health protocols, because, hey, let's have masks on, but they're around our neck and chin the entire time. Oh, when we sing the alma mater, make sure we're 6 feet apart, but we're in the trenches, normal. It just kind of feels a little weird, and we don't know the damage that this caused. And to Dan's point, there were positive COVID tests, and those players are on a list. There wasn't any positive tests right before the game. Zero positive results, but COVID works in ways that we still don't fully understand. And it's going to take a couple of days to really see what the damage is of having fans in the stands, what the damage is of having an actual game. So it's a little too soon to have a victory lap.
A lot of it's optics, though, right? Because look at the NBA bubble, right? Everybody's testing negative like every 2 days or whatever the testing is. And they have all the teams sitting like 6 feet apart in four rows of chairs. And it's like, you know, everybody here is negative. So why is it that they can't just be on top? And
just
then
in case.
You go and you
it's
do the
optics,
huddles,
though.
And you're playing each other on court. It's just optics.
I don't think that that's just optics. I think that's compensating for the unknown. I think there are so many things that remain unknown that we're just going to err on the side of caution. I don't think that people sitting apart from each other at an NBA bubble, I think that's the protocol going in that they had, because there are some things about this that remain unknown. You don't know if somebody's got a false negative or whatever, and so you're just extra careful.
And it'll take maybe Danwell House, if he has someone in his hotel room and it forces him to be booted from the bubble, that happens, Danwell House, as Dan likes to call him, is surrounded by his teammates. He might be spreading the disease before a positive test even emerges. So you have to have those safety protocols. I just find it really funny in the NFL because everyone, you can see it in football, it's really hard to talk and communicate. These guys are in people's headsets and they're pulling the mask down, and that's when you need the mask on.
I was going to say, Ed, sometimes, Mike, have you tried coaching with a mask on? Sometimes, because I have. Sometimes you need to hammer home your point, and you need them to see your face. And sometimes the words don't come out correctly with a mask on, and your facial expression, they can't see just how angry you are. And you just have to rip the mask off, and you have to show them everything. And so I'm okay with it. Like, listen, they've all been tested.
Reckless.
No, it's not reckless, okay?
I mean, your team does not have the protocols that an NFL team does. You should not be admitting this
my
on national
team.
I
also, my lacrosse team does. No, there's social distancing. Yeah, first off, you have to get your temperature before you walk into my practice facility,
okay? Yeah.
Twice.
I think your lacrosse team actually has more resources than certain NFL teams, too.
It does. Thank you.
I think you also knew Mike hasn't tried coaching with wearing a mask, because what would he have coached wearing a mask?
It was a rhetorical question. I want the audience to know that we all reacted the same way in the Zoom and here to Stu Gatz's "because I have."
Yeah.
Because we all knew it was coming. Have you coached a game, person listening to this, with or without a mask? Because I have.
Right. Do you know why I was alley-oop off the backboard?
Do you know why I was quarantined for 14 days after Maryland and didn't do my job well here and sort of ruined the radio show? Because I have. I want to get back to my beloved Danwell House. Can we examine this for a second? Let's think about this for a second.
Danwell?
I want you to absorb.
Danwell now.
Yeah, he's Danwell. We're going to make him a combination of Daniel and Manuel for our purposes here. I want you to absorb the horror, in having the NBA tell your wife that you cheated on her and then send you home to her. I want you to examine all of that. It's not enough that you just cheated on her, but you also embarrassed her in a way that now everyone knows about.
Right.
And then they kick you out and say, now you need to go home to her. I want everyone to absorb how terrible that must be.
I'm not certain he's going home to her
fair enough, but you understand what my point
is.
The NBA is basically announcing to your wife that you've cheated on her.
Allegedly cheated. There's no way to know for certain.
Yeah, they could have been playing Parcheesi.
Fair enough. They could have been playing Parcheesi. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Was Danwell House playing Parcheesi with that IG model? Then, by the way, he could have just waited a game. His loins could have waited a game, or that Parcheesi game could have waited a game, just one game, because Houston was about to be eliminated.
Dan, when you want to play Parcheesi, you got to play Parcheesi right away.
Especially if you haven't played Parcheesi in a very long time.
Exactly.
You start really wanting to play Parcheesi. You might play Parcheesi with damn near anybody that crosses your path.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Do you know what Parcheesi is? Because I think that game is so old. I believe that. It's a great comedic word.
It's the perfect
choice. It is the perfect. I want people to Google
Parcheesi.
Parcheesi. I don't know how to spell Parcheesi, but I know that comedically, I don't think I could have thought of a better, funnier word. I also think they stopped making Parcheesi in the 80s.
It's got to be Parcheesy.
I don't know.
It ends with an I.
Well, why cheesy?
Is it successful? Is Parcheesi still a thing? Is Parcheesi still being made?
Yeah,
is
it's that thriving.
It was introduced in 1867.
It's such a good word. I hope that Danwell House was evicted from the bubble for playing Parcheesi.
What would be second place in terms of games for Mike there? Because I think Yahtzee, maybe Parcheesi.
It's funny that you say that, because I was like, do I go Yahtzee or Parcheesi?
No, you chose correctly. Make no mistake about it.
Shoots and Ladders is a good one. Yes.
Candyland.
Hungry, Hungry Hippo.
We're getting more modern, but these are all funny, but they're definitely way more modern.
Parcheesi.